Embedded Strategies Forum on World-Class IT. I'm Peter High, and I'm pleased to welcome Yasser Anwar to the broadcast. Yasser is a Senior Vice President and Head of Digital Technology at Macy's, one of the nation's largest omnichannel retailers, with fiscal 2015 sales of $27 billion. Yasser is also the founder of Macy's Labs, which he describes as a, quote, crucible for idea generation, feasibility analysis, and experimentation, end quote. Prior to Macy's, Yasser served as the director of engineering with Walmart Labs. I recently caught up with Yasser in his office in San Francisco, and our conversation covered World-Class IT Principle 1, people, as we discussed attracting top talent in the Bay Area. Principle 2, infrastructure, as we discussed building a technology architecture of domain services focused on outcome. Principle 3, project and portfolio management, as we discussed the creation of the omni customer experience and shaping products based on customer feedback. We also covered how a long-standing brand like Macy's can be leveraged in competition with digital native organizations, among a variety of other topics.
This is Peter High. Please consider reading my new book, Implementing World-Class IT Strategy, How IT Can Drive Organizational Innovation. The book covers topics such as the CIO as strategic facilitator, the development of IT missions, facilitating corporate and divisional strategy, the development of IT's own strategic plans, the development of enterprise architecture, reviewing, refreshing, and communicating strategy, and several other topics, all told with stories from leading CIOs from a variety of major corporations. You can find it at Amazon.com, my publisher's website, Wiley.com, and at your better bookstores. Thank you very much.
Yasser Anwar, welcome to the Forum on World-Class IT.
Hi, Peter. Thanks for inviting me on this forum.
It's a great pleasure. Yasser, I thought we'd begin with your role. You are the Senior Vice President and Head of Digital Technology at Macy's. And I wonder if you could describe your purview within that role.
Sure. As the Head of Digital Technology, my responsibilities span over all digital, which is what we serve to our customers, but at the same time, also the tools that our internal employees use to be able to produce and power up the customer-facing channels. So in other words, you can say our websites, like both the brands, Bloomingdale's and Macy's, the web applications, the small web, which is a mobile-enabled web, we call it big web and small web, and then the mobile applications, the iOS, Android, which we have for both the brands, plus all the underlying technology that powers up those customer experiences and those channels, and some part of digital inside the store's experiences as well. It also, from the other lens, if you look at it, we have, I run the project management organization, we have release operations, CI, CD, a digital support organization, delivery management. So essentially all the technology functions associated to be able to power up experiences for our customers and the tools associated with them is what me and my teams are responsible for.
And there are obviously other divisions of the organization that have customer-centric responsibilities. You have other divisions, most prominently, presumably, the IT department that have technology components to them as well. How do you interact with those different divisions of the organization and partner with them?
The success lies in having true partnership, and that's why I use the word true, not just the partnership, but true partnership with all the functions that have to play in, because what we provide in our digital world is the user experience, right, that allows us. So how I differentiate is we run the conversion, the customer conversion piece of the business, right, because the customers come through our digital platforms, and once they land there, then we help them convert. Now, getting the customers to those digital platforms is marketing. If you look at the customer management channels like the customer service, those departments exist. Then we have a creative department, brand. So all these functions, including our HR, is very important part of the ecosystem. So we work, I mean, my attempt and my team's attempt has to kind of work hand in hand with all of these departments, and especially the culture which we have built at Macy's, especially in the digital area, is all about valuing as a whole and not just focusing and doing. We try to minimize the handshakes that happen between different departments and organizations. We try to bring them together as part of any big, large, or small initiative we're going together, and we try to have them participate equally and then take our own pieces which needs to be done, but we're all working together to deliver the experiences which we have for our customers.
Macy's has a long and storied history, and there are many retailers of longer vintage who've had or which have had trouble competing with the digital native organizations. How have you thought about competing with organizations that may not have the sort of legacy, especially from a technology perspective or practices perspective? How have you thought about competing with and leveraging the advantages of a long-standing brand against some of the digital native organizations?
Yeah, I don't know how many people know, but we are close to a 160-year-old company. And if I read the Macy's founder, R.H. Macy's, he himself was an innovator. So it's in our kind of, you know, grassroots level, you can say, from the back in those days. In our genes, he innovated various things, including the Macy's Grand Parade. And, you know, Macy's were the first organization to promote the women executive back in, I think, close to 100 years ago into an executive position. So a lot of innovative things have been part of the organization. And to your point, the digital-only organizations, they are leveraging the aspect of they don't have a lot of organizational dependencies in terms of running large operations, whether they are stores, physical stores, and operations. So they have their own leverage of starting digital only. However, we as a Macy's as a company, we bring in deep expertise in terms of the different cyclical or you can say spiky trends in the retail, and we have executives in our organization in the company across the different departments, across the different functions, who are very seasoned, who have seen the retail cycles decade over decade and have seen how customer evolution has taken place. We have stores, right? And stores as a physical means to engage where customers come in. I think we bring the best of the both towards, and our goal also as an omni-channel organization is to optimize both of these areas, because the good news is, even though the digital companies started as the digital, they have only digital arm to kind of accelerate on, and we are not behind in the digital world also. We have gone through a large digital transformation, and because of that, we are good at digital, and we have a deep, deep expertise on the physical side, on the store side. So the key is how quickly and faster we can continue optimizing the two in a connected, in a bridge way. And I think that's where our leverage or edge is over the traditional digital retailers.
You referenced omnichannel, and I found it very interesting that one of the things you've talked about is omni-customer experience and innovating with customers. Can you talk a bit about some of the methods you and your colleagues use to accomplish this?
It's kind of a term, you know, industry says omnichannel, and I personally prefer to call it omni-customer. And the reason, like you said, is because it is the customer that is getting disrupted, that is getting trained and educated every week, every month, due to proliferation of devices, whether you call it IoT, whether you call it, you know, the whole propagation of the startups. And so many solutions are out there in the industry that are training and retraining customers, and the customer is actually becoming an omni-customer. So how do you change the lens and make yourself an omni-retailer in a way that you really look at customer lens and, you know, see how customer is operating? For example, that's where the whole aspect you mentioned about innovating with the customers. We're not building a time machine. We're not working on a medicine that solves a deadly disease. We are in retail. So in retail, given what I mentioned about the customer disruption that is happening, the key is that we don't do cycles in innovation around the customer. Don't do it in isolation. Don't sit in a lab in a bubble and do innovation for the customers for 6, 8, or 10 months, 12 months, and come back and see whether the customer is going to react to it in a positive way. Because you might have missed the bus completely, because speed at which the change is coming at us is very fast. It's no more an annual 2-year cycle. It's just happening every month. So the key is, when we are building features, when we are building experiences for the customers, we do it with the customers. And to go a little bit detail into it, is the customer-centric experimentation culture, which we have proudly built here at Macy's, where we focus on chiseling or shaping our product purely based on customer signals and customer feedback, versus having our own large backlog of the experience we're going to build for the customer, because it may not stick with the customer when we release it. So key is, every business, every way people work, they have something what we call build, measure, and learn cycle. And we used to have, for large ideas, the build, measure, learn cycle that includes from anywhere from ideation all the way into the hands of the customers could be from 9 to 12 months. what we have effectively done is reduce that build, measure, learn cycle to a month. And I think that's a very powerful transformation we have gone through.
I was also interested, Yasser, to find that you have restructured your organization based on the customer journey. Can you describe how this has played out and some of the organizational ramifications?
It was an evolution. First, what we did is we tried multiple tests. So like eating our own dog food, we test with our customers. So do we test with our internal processes, organizational structures, and delivery mechanisms. So what we have here is an organization that has evolved over the period of 3-4 years that is focused on customer experience. So if you take it at a typical e-commerce or a digital commerce pipeline, you have mechanisms to bring more eyeballs to your platform, which is the marketing, search engine optimization, SEO, SEM work, or you know, some of the loyalty work around points and earn and redeem things. And then you have things when the customer lands on your digital platform, then you have to help facilitate customer discover your product. And then next thing comes, which includes search engines, which includes attribution and those things. Then comes the next, which is you are enabling the customer to quickly select the most relevant product for them. And then you take the customers, should be taking them through a quick purchase cycle and then delivery, and then followed up by the whole customer management, which may include returns, which may include customer service calls. So what we have done is, instead of keeping it as a systemic type of organization, which many companies have, which is your organization is focused on different systems you've built over the period of time, we have created what we call concept called domains. And these domains are nothing but, like I explained to you, the customer cycle, that it is, there is a discovery domain, there is a selection domain, there is a purchase and delivery domain, customer management domain, a marketing domain, and few other foundational domains like architecture, platform, performance, and stability. And what it does, the key theme around is, it aligns groups and structures, a lot of your teams and your people, towards specific customer needles. So if you look at purchase and delivery, their primary KPI, or you know, the needle they want to move, is like, how quickly can they convert the customer? How quickly can they have the customer enter a bag, or what they add their items to our bag, and how quickly can you help them check out? So remove the customer friction or friction-free shopping. That's their primary KPI. So what we do is we have not only put our delivery processes up towards that, but we have also gone through a restructuring where our teams are organized towards that, and the teams are driven by, you know, what we call triads, like a director level program, product, and engineering champion, who essentially, you can say, in an entrepreneur model, they are running this domain, like I mentioned, purchase and delivery domain, and they know their KPIs, they know what customer needles they need to move, and they work directly with the business stakeholders and provide the transparency and traceability to the entire organization. They think like entrepreneurs. They come up with their annual quarterly backlog by their self-ideation within their own domain. And at the same time, they collect feedback from the senior stakeholders and sponsors and come up with a backlog that is, you can say, that they think is the best ROI-driven backlog, and then work with their delivery teams to deliver that. In a sense, it's an entrepreneurial mode of customer centricity, and how do you structure not only your delivery processes, but the entire organizational model is driven towards customer centricity.
You referenced entrepreneurship, and I was very interested not only in this conversation, but in past ones, your reference to entrepreneurship within large companies, thinking almost like developing new small businesses within the construct of a larger one. An earlier example from your own career is your having founded Macy's Labs, for instance. Can you talk a bit about the insight there in terms of the entrepreneurial experience within a larger organization and the specific ways in which you've applied some of those insights into Macy's Labs and now into digital more generally speaking?
I think you brought up a good point. Macy's Labs is, you know, which I proudly feel that we can easily differentiate ourselves from, you know, the many labs and many labs exist in various companies. We differentiate ourselves that we're not a lab in a bubble that we had $few million and we put 50-100 people together and say, go and do R&D. Macy's Labs is a means through which we have established an organizational DNA that is based on innovation. So it's a cultural shift. What I also sometimes call is, we have shifted from a culture that was focused on output to a culture that is focused on outcome. So the lab is, for example, one of the tools in our lab is what we call Lean Startups. In April 2014, we kicked off our first Lean Startup in Macy's, and today we are running 22 Lean Startups. And that's what entrepreneurship is, we're talking about. Even though we are part of a large, big company, we are able to spin these startups, which is a small, empowered team who are focused on a particular theme, particular hypothesis, and they are given autonomy. They're given empowerment to go and test what works best for our customers. They go and run multiple experiments and tests with our customers, come back with the results, declare winners, tell us what tests worked with the customers, what didn't, and based on our, and we've got a deep analytical engine associated with it, along with an experimentation engine, which was also produced as part of the Macy's Labs. So we have a homegrown experimentation and analytics framework through which we work together and figure out what specific experiments and tests are working with the customers. And based on that, we either cut, bait, pivot, or invest in those winning tests. So we have taken it away from the opinions of the senior leaders, what is going to work with the customers or not. We are directly taking the opinions and signals from the customers through this. This has proven tremendously well for us, and also the mechanism, how do we engage with our customers, given the kind of scale I shared with you, that from one lean startup, we have scaled up to 22 this year.
You've also built out a technology architecture of domain services, APIs, microservices. For others who are maybe just learning about the benefits of this but haven't yet walked the same journey that you have, can you talk about why this is so important and also some of the challenges that you've faced and ultimately the value that you've derived out of such a model?
I would say it's a natural way how an organization can scale their digital platforms. It's a natural way how you can keep them up and running for your customers when they need them. It is a natural way how you would be able to serve more relevant, customized, personalized information based on the context the customer is coming in. For example, mobile traffic, I would say, has even gone past the big web traffic, and the majority of our traffic, even we as Macy's Experience, is coming from our mobile channels, whether it's mobile applications or mobile-enabled web. So how do you serve mobile expectations of a customer in that channel? How do you serve digital in stores versus desktop experiences and all that? What microservices has enabled us, provided us the scale, and what I also technically call fault isolation. Because if you have services all running together, even though you would have services and they would be as good as any other RESTful APIs and interfaces, but if they're all clubbed together, you have a big problem of fault concentration. And if one of them breaks, you may bring other experiences. For example, we were talking about the whole domain-based approach. What if a marketing service is down for some reason or is having issues? It should not impact your checkout services or checkout experiences for the customers. Now, if some of your content is not working, why should it impact the search and all of that? So keeping that in mind, I mentioned earlier that we structured our organization to be able to orient their teams to deliver towards those KPIs. We've also evolved our architecture towards that, and it allows us time to market. For example, if a particular domain has to release more frequently than the other domain, which logically makes sense, then why are we tying everybody towards that one common day or point where they can release stuff into production? There are multiple dimensions of benefits for this, but our microservices architecture and our domain-based approach towards delivery and release pipeline, what we call continuous delivery CD pipeline here, has helped us a lot to be able to isolate problems, isolate faults, and go to market quickly, basically on demand of the business.
I was also interested to learn that you've begun to use IBM Watson as a smart shopping assistant. And on some related topics, I'd be interested in how you see artificial intelligence, more generally speaking, conversational commerce, bots, some of these newer trends factoring into digital retail experience.
And then, as we know, as you already kind of summarized that, I think 3-4 trends are emerging in general and technology frameworks and platforms, which are generic enough. There are thousands and thousands of startups that are leveraging one or two or a combination of these. But if I put it technically speaking, there is a concept of robots or bots in general, right? And there could be robots or there could be chat bots or different types of bots. So the robotics is an interesting area that is emerging. Then the other emerging space is mixed reality, which is, whether AR, augmented reality, or virtual reality, or holograms, that is emerging. And then the third piece you mentioned is artificial intelligence and machine learning. And, you know, all of them feed on today is on the concept of cloud and, you know, the whole aspect of elastic capacity that's available. And that is allowing us to experiment faster, cheaper, and better with customers. And so is the cost of opening up a startup or even becoming a retailer can be, you know, just overnight. If you have a cloud instance and you have some product and you can build an application and quickly go to market and test out with the customer. So it brings an innumerable world of, the opportunities are innumerable in this world of this. So going back to your point, we are very interested in all of those trends, which is whether it's machine learning, AI, AR, VR, and robotics. I can only share so much, but we are running many internal tests and some even customer-facing tests to kind of figure out which one of them has got the, as a technology, it's mature. For example, the accuracy of an AR, VR, or in some cases, the learning curve of a machine learning framework, how well they are going to do in gel with our customers. What we are focusing is we are building, again, as part of the whole lean development, we are building frameworks that are allowing us to not only experiment with one framework out there, one startup that is claiming success in the area of machine learning or AI, but we are building a framework in our technology platform that would allow us to quickly plug and play with multiple of these offerings in the market and allow us to learn faster than others and our competitors. I think that's one of the best ways to kind of go around this. And then figure out what solution is going to work for which facet of our business. We are also investing internally on some of these things, but we also building a framework that would allow us to quickly test what other people are doing and figure out what works for us. Same thing applies with, you know, robotics also, and especially the conversational commerce and chatbots are. We are also looking into those aspects and see how that area can help us.
You work in the Bay Area, and obviously that is one of the premier places on earth, if not the premier place on earth, for tech talent, but also competition, as there are a great number of startups and technology companies competing for very talented people. How do you think about recruiting and retaining top talent in such an environment?
I often say that it is not the system's uptime or stability that keep me awake at night. I think the only thing that I can think of is the war of talent in the Bay Area. That sometimes worries me, right? Because sometimes, you know, it's just so much of competition, so much of options available to people to go and work and try things. And even if you look at in the Bay Area, the culture is different. The tenure of or the way people or companies look at employees and resources is no more like, is he or she is going to stay here for 10 years or 20 years. They're looking for it that if a person is going to be here for 2 years or 3 years, what can I get out of it in a mutual relationship? And that's a very different lens, and that has evolved in my mind in just this decade. It wasn't existing before that. So the employer's lens of hiring people has changed. That has given a ton of tolerance to people of different diverse backgrounds and different diverse career goals coming in, working in teams together and producing a long-term, short-term, mid-term sort of outcome for that company. Same thing applies because of that culture is changing. The people are looking for all different kind of gigs existing. It definitely becomes a challenge, something to kind of you always watch for. To be honest, with our culture, Macy's, we are, you know, located at a right place in downtown San Francisco, very conveniently located, great offices. Some of the cultural shifts which we have done in the organization, which I mentioned about the whole culture of innovation, the empowerment of the teams, letting the teams decide based on the customer signals versus we throwing work at them and their order takers. I think that shift has tremendously helped us because we don't have to put billboards too many on the streets and highways to tell us, hey, Macy's is hiring, come and join us. I think it is the work that goes on inside our offices that radiates out. People are very well connected in Bay Area and people talk. If something cool is going on, in a company, and you know, especially the aspect of the lean startups that is going on here, our people go talk to their friends and families. They, you know, people are sharing. So naturally, the work that is being done in the past few years is radiating out, and people you know, get the cast of words that what is happening. I get approached many times by people saying, hey, if there is something relevant, let us know. I would like to come and work for Macy's. So luckily, we have not had struggles. And our attrition rate is also lower than the industry standard, which we see in the Bay Area compared to Bay Area. So, and, you know, another aspect is the work-life balance and the culture. Most important thing I would like you to take home is when I came to Macy's 4 years ago, and I've worked for multiple organizations, the internal DNA of this culture is supporting good ideas, is supporting and helping people who bring goodness. So that exists at all levels in the organization, and that is what attracted me to Macy's as well. And I think when people work here, or people who know the people who work here, they understand that, and I think that is a big motivation for a lot of us who work at Macy's and people who join us.
Yasser Anwar, thank you so much for joining us on the Forum on World Class IT and sharing your perspectives as the Senior Vice President and Head of Digital Technology at Macy's. It's been a great conversation.
Thank you, Peter. It was great chatting with you.
You've just listened to a podcast in a series we call Meta Strategies Forum on World Class IT. If you like what you've heard, please consider reading my book, World Class IT, Why Businesses Succeed When IT Triumphs, published by Josie Bass, a division of Wiley Press, in December of 2009. Both the book and the forum on World Class IT offer stories from a wide range of top IT leaders relating to MetaStrategy's five principles of World Class IT. The five principles are as follows. Principle one is people, and it's really the foundational principle. Without the right people doing the right jobs at the right time, it'll be nearly impossible to achieve excellent performance. The second principle is infrastructure. We like to say that this is the principle that separates proactive organizations from reactive ones. If infrastructure is not reliably performing its tasks, the IT organization will become stuck in reactive mode, consistently fighting fires. If systems and hardware and networks and so on work reliably, then a larger portion of the organization can think about the future. The third principle is project and portfolio management. This is the engine through which new capabilities can be brought to bear on behalf of the company. It is important to ensure that projects are delivered on time, on budget, and on target, and that the portfolio collectively supports the objectives of the business. The fourth principle is IT and business partnerships. It's important that, first and foremost, the different parts of IT, from business analysis to development and QA, through to support and all other aspects of IT, communicate effectively and efficiently. It's equally important, then, that IT develop a partnering relationship with the business that it is a part of. If the three prior principles are done well, then IT should earn a place at the strategy setting table, driving different parts of the business strategy. The fifth and last principle is external partnerships. Outsourcing is becoming a crucial weapon that organizations are employing, and managing these relationships to ensure that value is achieved is critical. In the fourth principle, the organization has learned and contributed to the discussion about what is strategic and what is not. Once that's clear, then it will be easier to determine which aspects of IT might be better managed by external partners or vendors. For more information on these five principles and the sub-principles that are associated with each, please visit our website at www.metastrategy.com, and please share your thoughts and comments by contacting us at feedback@metastrategy.com. And our theme music was written by David Armin. I'm Peter High. Thanks for listening. We'll be right back.